so far. So, 20 years ago, exactly, Stickel, myself, and others came up with the first, I would say, proper radio-selective sample of the LUX, which were defined as having influx spectrum in the radio, or 5, and equivalent width of the rest, LUX frame, less than 5 ohms. Which was quite arbitrary, but seemed to work for some reason. Stock it out the same year, using an X-ray sample, at the same criterion, only without, but in the observer's frame, but to distinguish between the LUX and galaxies, we had the LUX spectral frame that they have an X-ray sample, then to include a new thing, which was the calcium break parameter. Calcium break is defined as the C parameter, which is 1 minus the flux, the blue end of the calcium break, which is here, divided the flux and the red end. So when flux, the blue and the red are the same, this is 1 and C is 0. When there is no blue, continue, this is 1. Typical ellipticals, the calcium break is 50%. So Stock et al. Said, okay, we want something more in the blue because there is a non-thermal continuum, for example, just be less than 50%, let's say 25%. So Stock said, the LUX are things which have more equivalent width and the calcium break is 50%. Scarpa Palomo, a few years later, studied a magnesium 2 emission line for the LUX in blue, in black, and the empty squares are the first two squares. And this is a log magnesium 2 emission line, which is log continuum, and they saw there was no bimodal distribution. There was a continuum of sources, and we called the LUX the things which had a stronger continuum, which made them be in this part of that, that there was no division. Marché et al., 96, representative sample again, they expanded a little bit the continuum of the LUX, including a wider region of equivalent width, and they pushed up the calcium break up to 40%. Terminerand, myself and Paolo Giommi, confirmed that yes, the LUX can go up to calcium break 20%, because at this value, you go from being low dominant to core dominant. And Mina made some very nice simulations where we took a typical spectrum of an elliptical galaxy, we added the non-thermal continuum, and you can see you go from being an elliptical to being a featureless LUX by just by changing course the ratio of the non-thermal to thermal to non-thermal to galaxy continuum. Trivial, and you know, it's the situation is not clear. It looks like there is no dichotomy. It's clear dichotomy. Another point which is very relevant is topic. Are the differences between the LUX and the spectral wave. Of course, the spectra are different by definition, but there are some transition objects. The LUX itself, 95, this is a spectrum. The spectrum you see H alpha there, stronger than the dividing line of 5 angstrom or 7 angstrom, and a very broad line. So in those days, the LUX was not the LUX. They also differ in extended the powers. We know that typically, the spectral wave are two light and the LUX are one light in terms of power, but we also know that radio selective the LUX is the one just example, Rector Stokey, they can reach in extended power the FR2 level, which is here, while X-ray resources only are in the FR1 regime. So there is a difference in the band. Radio selective sources that were higher extended power. Flex distributions are extremely different. But the point to keep in mind is that about half of the sources in the redshift have no redshift. So when you plot them, when you plot the ones with redshift, half of the redshift emission redshift. The evolution is also different. I just need the two papers there. The point now, I think, can be stated that flux spectrum quasars and the LUX selected in the radio have a similar and positive evolution, while the LUX selected in the X-ray are showing no, or in some cases even negative. This is a fair statement of what was happening now. Synchrotronic frequencies, we've heard a lot about yesterday, about HSP, ISP, LSP. This synchrotronic frequency is a defining, it's supposed to be a defining feature of lasers. It's well known now that the distributions for perpetual quintas at the top and the lax are totally different. Perpetual quintas can only reach up to 10 to the 14 to the 15 hertz. The lax go all the way up to 10 to 18. Also, when you look at different bands, you get different mixes of VLAX and spectrum quantities. In the radio band, you typically get a minority of VLAX. When you go to the X-ray band, most of the bases are VLAX, not even one. So, based on all this, we came up with a new idea, because so far, some of the differences have been made by unified schemes. Chuck Emery yesterday was asking if Euripod 195 is still valid. The answer is yes, but there have been some smaller changes. Some of them I'm going to discuss today, not many. But the basic idea was that the VLAX are modified at once with the jet point borders, and most of the bases are never cruise point borders. But if you do this, if you assume this, you cannot explain transition objects, you cannot explain the fact that the evolution of the last changes when you look in different bands, doesn't make any sense. And also you cannot explain the fact that perpetual quintas have a different Lubin distribution than the last. There's no way. So, what we do, we did, we started from unified gains and we added two things. Dilution of the emission lines and selection effects. Mark was saying yesterday selection effects are very important. We could agree more. And so we do a, we assume an obvious thing, that the optical spectrum is a result of the components, which is non-thermal, thermal-related, thermal, occasional disk related, and all scales. It's so trivial, but believe me, it hasn't been, the implication of this have not been carried forward until now. So, the way we tackled this was through Monte Carlo simulations, which are can be quite complex, but in one slide I tried to summarize what we did. So, we started with a single minority function in the radio. We take the radio band as a default, which is derived from WMAP5 as a sample of other sources. We then derive minority evolution from that sample, but we know that minority evolution is not a pure minority evolution, that the router relationship to the exchange, we fit this type of minority evolution, which gives, and the best fit is a Fincke relationship 1.9. So, the evolution, the luminosity increases until then, and about that sort of starts the time. We also know that low luminosity radio galaxies evolve less. So, we have this evolution gets progressively weaker below 1096 watts per hertz. The non thermal component is very simple. It's a simple synchrotron component, a single distribution of electrical energies, one magnetic. Magnetic field, and Doppler factor centered around the value of 15, which agrees with many studies on luminal motion and other things. The thermal component is it's a slow template with broad lines, and this is the key point. We now know that the key dividing line in radio galaxies is not the F1 or F2 thing, but it's so called Hertz and Hertz. Hertz stands for high excitation radio galaxies, and Lux is low excitation radio galaxies. So, we know that low excitation radio galaxies do not evolve. They don't have a standard occasion disk. They must have, they could have an ADAP, but they don't evolve. So, we associate this thermal component only to the sources which are evolving there. If you're not evolving in the radio, you don't have an occasion disk, and you have an ADAP or whatever. The equivalent distribution is this one we take again from Sloan, which is the one from the 5GN. And we all know that the post galaxy bases are standard candles and they are giant emitters. The only missing thing now is that we need to link the non-thermal and the thermal components, which basically gives us a link to the disk and the jet. We do this using the SDs of light and more lasers, but it works. Just to give you an idea, these are SDs of four classical lasers. Well, you see the three components. The red one is the non-thermal component. In blue, you have the thermal, the disk. And in orange, you have the elliptical galaxy. So, DIST-23, of course, is a classical perpetual quintas. It's strong broad lines. VLAC is the lines are barely there. Marconi type 1 is mostly all non-thermal. So, we run the simulations for two samples, 10,000 sources each. One is supposed to simulate a radioactive sample with a plus cut of point Archansky. One simulating an X-ray sample, much medium sensors, the Einstein Multiscale Survey. We classify sources in the standard way because we want to compare our simulation with data. So the cross spectrum operators is anything with equivalent width of the line larger than 5 angstrom, and if you lack is something which where all the lines are below this window. We also assume that you can measure the redshift if you cannot measure the redshift, the equivalent width is less than 2 angstrom, or if your host galaxy, the granularized, is swamped by the jet by the demand. The galaxy has a cation break larger than 10%. So, and this is very important now. We didn't want to reproduce everything by having millions of parameters. We want to keep our assumptions really to a minimum and match the observations. So this is, we want to think robust designs, almost independent of the assumptions. So again, we don't want to reproduce everything because it's very easy to have tons of parameters to pick something in yourself. This was not our goal. Of course, the point of having a simulation is you try to match what you see, but then you also make predictions. That's also the very important part. Sorry? Yeah, calcium, elliptical galaxies have calcium break about 50%. Yes. If something has calcium break at 50%, it's not a bit loud, it's radioized. I don't understand your question. Yes, correct.
I'm sorry, this radio galaxy,
what does it
see? Calcium,
calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium,
calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium,
calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, calcium, main results are that we managed to reproduce quite well the properties of hyperdensity radio density samples. In particular, we get the right fractions of the elastic equators in the X-ray and radio density samples. We managed to get the evolution right through the view of the test. I guess most of you are familiar with the view of the view of the less than 0.5 means evolution, and less than 0.5 means negative evolution. It's a table with the results. Radio sample at the top. Plus the operators evolve, the LAX evolve. X-ray the sample, the bottom, plus the operators evolve, the LAX will evolve. Exactly as observed. Edge distributions are also reproduced. New peak distributions. This is plot of new peak for the radio and the X-ray samples. As you can see, solid lines are the observed ones, dashed lines are the predictions, and we do manage to reproduce the fact that there are no quasars in the new peak larger than the 14-15 in both paths. Why PLX can go all the way, as we know, up to the we also managed to reproduce how many PLX there are in every sample without redshift, because of the way we decided this is measurable or not. Of course, as I mentioned earlier, we want our results not to depend on our assumptions, so we check how stable they are. And so we change the evolution and the slope that we got from the map best fit by 1 sigma. We changed completely noisy functions. We took Yuri Padovani and then we fitted, so we did redo everything using those noisy function evolution. We also changed Doppler factor, which we assumed to be 15 with a sigma of 2, from 5 to 20. We even included the dependence of the factor on radio power, which has been suggested by some authors. Nothing changes. The main results are still there, which is what we want. We want the robust results, which don't depend on the individual assumption. Now, the implication, this is the most fun part of the talk, of course. Okay, implication number one. Most VLAX in radio samples have an accretion disk. They are quasars. The only point is that their lines are swamped by the jet. So they intrinsically are quasars, where you have a strong jet which is swamping your lines. But many of them have a very strong H alpha. But H alpha in our window when you are a redshift less than 0.2, getting the need for it. So these things are quasars, which are called the LACs, because we only look at the optical, but if you went to the infrared, they will be called quasars, as they are. On the other hand, when you go to the excited samples, most excited LACs don't have an redshift. They are indeed, this is in agreement with the fact that if you look at the image sets and you adjust the LACs, most IWGASP LACs have emission lines, although they are weak, but many IWGASP LACs have no line. You just see the galaxy with a blue component, which is a jet. This is very interesting now. We started from lasers, but we get that between 5-15% of our sources, they look like radio galaxies in the optical. If you take an optical spectrum, they look like ellipticals, but they are not, because we started from Fresnel structure. They are blazers. So the ACB is like a blazer light, but the non-thermal component is swarmed by the host galaxy. And there have been many papers, few papers in the past, where people actually detected these sources. Look, the optical, an elliptical, but the ACD is a blazer. This is one of the most important points of the whole talk, so pay attention now. The LACs are only of two types. Forget about HPL, NDL, ISP, LSP, X-selected, radio-selected. Only two main types. First one, objects which are intrinsically weak. They're intrinsically weak, and you look at the spectrum, they have no line. Others are quasars, standard quasars with a standard accretion disk, but the jet is so strong that it's swamping everything away, and you still see weak lines. Biela Certe is not a Biela because it shows emission lines. It's a fast-spectrum quasar with a normal accretion disk with a very strong jet which is swamping everything up. So, in terms of blazer types, there are only two blazer types. Only two. There are the non-evolving LERs, so low excitation new galaxies, the non-evolving, and the evolving LERs. So these things have no accretion disk, they will have an ADAM, or low efficiency accretion disk. These things have a standard accretion disk, and they are evolving. This is going to be loved by the theorists. The different nuclear distributions is not due to synchrotron cooling, because we had no cooling in our simulations, and still we managed to reproduce the differences in the two or two classes, due to very simple effects. When you look at the X-ray band, most of your sources are going to have high NOP, obviously, because this is the band where they're going to be emitting most. High NOP means high X-ray to reflex ratio. It typically means low radio flux, it typically means low radio power, which means blurs. So these things are they have high NOP and they have a low radio power. Or you can have, so basically, whenever you have a quasar with high NOP, you're never going to call it a quasar, because it's going to have low radio power, it belongs to the LERs and not with the Hertz. The other point which can happen is that given the same radio power, radio flux, like here, when you have a source with a low peak, you're going to be able to see, say, the host galaxy or the lines. When you have a high peak source, everything is going to be washed away. So, blazers with high NOP are likely to have the emission lines completely swamped, and again, although they are quasars, you're going to call them BLACs. No emission lines. In our simulations, the large majority of sources with high NOP and high power have no redshift because the lines are swamped. And indeed, as we heard yesterday, most of the Fermi BLACs have no redshift. We predict that these sources are going to have redshift typical quasars, not of BLACs. So if you have in your sample BLACs without redshift, do not assume that the mean redshift is going to be the same as the BLAC sample. They are quasars, they're going to have a redshift which is higher than the BLACs which you have a redshift. And by the way, this agrees with a very recent study which I got because they're colleagues of mine, and they have not also created yet, but they've done a very careful study of BLACs without redshift, looking at Lyman continuum, and they do find that most of them are a ratio of 1. We couldn't say before because they have no features, but looking at lambda 14, you have to look at the ratio. Three slides on the Bayesian sequence. I have nothing against the Bayesian sequence, just make things sure. But I'm a scientist, I look at the data, and this is what we find. Just to remind you how we got the Bayesian sequence, this is for 1998, radio power versus UV. So they found that by using three different samples, selecting three different ways, there was an anti-correlation. High UV meant low power. This is our simulation. Without having any correlation between new peak and power, you get the same trend, only selection effect. When you are down there, you can only be at low power, then you cannot be there. Point number one. Point number two, the sources without redshift are there. So there is a gap there because you so, I'm done. I think there are a few things I want to take away from this talk, but the first one is that we haven't invented anything. Our work has been putting together a puzzle, but the pieces have been around for more than 20 years. We think that people have been not putting the pieces the right way. We think we have done that. So this puzzle has been around for 20 years or so, but I think it makes sense what we found today. So, starting point that there are only populations. Remember this? High excitation with the standard equation is high radio power evolving, low excitation, low radio power non-evolving. Then you this mix, you throw in a jet, you throw in a disk, and then you throw in a noise canceling component, and bingo, you explain everything. All the properties of lasers are explained, including the difference between the perpetual lasers. The last, I remind you, are only of two types. I couldn't have fake VLAX because they're actually the quasars with the lines swamped by the jet. And if you do any study, these have to go with the transparent quasars. They are not a separate class. They need to go with the quasars. Evolution or function, they are just quasars. You happen to have a very strong jet. And then we have the real VLAX. And by the way, these ones are typically found in radio study samples, and these ones in X-ray. Then you have the real ones, which have big weak lines with a very strong jet, and the others, so low excitation and others. And another interesting point, that some sources which look like radio galaxies in the optical are actually blazars, because there are blazars where the host galaxy, well, the blazar is quite weak, the host galaxy is strong, you call it a radio galaxy in the optical, but if you look at the CD, the blazar. And last but not least, the laser sequence is simply due to selection effects, because we could reproduce it without assuming any dependence between new peak and radio power. And visually VLAX, so we find that if you have high new peak, high power, your blazar is very likely to be without a redshift. But the intrinsic redshift will be around, less than 1.5. So all of this was in the radio and X-ray. Bauer and I are planning to work on the gamma ray side as well, which is more complicated because we have the external component on that, but we want to do it, and if you want to read the paper, it's been out of the edge for the past 2 weeks. Thank you very much. I'm sure as well. Correct. Yes.
So, you don't really mind any of our surveys. So, I'm just wondering how that fits with what you're
saying. As I said, you know, I mean, the details, of course, are really dependent on what you put in. We did our best to tie ourselves to the observables. The point here is that we do find an anti-correlation. those also we can discuss it later, but they turn out to be in our simulations. So you can see why they're there, but the main point is that we do find that correlation without putting in any dependence in the weak and echo. Good. Sorry.
Good.
Wait, we don't see them where? In which survey?
There are no rays allowed to test 1.4. And if we think that it's not 1.4, we can see this sort of cloud area of the light cover. And if you want to use a line of the line, right?
Yeah, but I have to think about all the complications of, you know. But too big is going to change, of course. It's moving by a bit, by quite a bit, right? It goes like delta,
right?
Yeah, but remember, these things are going. You're saying there should be radio galaxies with a peak?
Before it becomes radio galaxies, it will be less big data that will allow the line to show. That's the best thing.
Yeah.
Another thing that follows, I really want to have one of these orders of the new several different one agents and the power.
I think we make it offline.
Yeah, sorry, we don't have time. Now we have to move on. Yeah, maybe we'll return to the discussion.
Hopefully,
this evening.
Yes. Yeah, I think this is definitely worth the discussion.
Sequence okay or something. I don't know.
Okay, next up is Jesse Fink is going to talk about a physical model with a revised laser.
Sure, but you might just have to hear. Okay.